Good morning.
Morning, Sensei.
One of the truths about our practice in Zen in particular, it isn't always that the teacher is the teacher. Sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes the student teaches the teacher. And when I got here this morning, following having a grande green iced tea at Starbucks, I came in. And I was the first one here, so I organized a little bit. And then Jerry came in, and he said to me, "Well, how are you?" And I said, "I'm fine." And he said, "Well, yeah." So I said, "Except that the bathroom doors don't open." And when I came in, because of the iced tea, I went down the hallway, and I jiggled the handle, and nothing happened. So I tried out the keys that I have, nothing happened. And then I tried to figure out, well, how long would it take me to get to Panera's and back? And so I said to Jerry, "Yeah, the problem is the bathroom doors are open." So Jerry walks down the hallway and pushes the door open like he does this every day. So the point is that I had this fixed idea about how things work. You go down, you face a door, you turn the handle, and you go in. And if that didn't work, then I concluded that the door was locked and there was no way in. And so how many times do I or we do that in our lives, right? Had this fixed idea about how things work. Fortunately, I didn't get angry or kick the door. I just panicked. So I'm going to start with a question. What is it that runs through your family and my family and everyone's family? What is it that runs through our families? Anybody have any thoughts?
Humanity.
Humanity. Okay.
Mortality.
Mortality. That's right. Death, the D word, death, runs through each one of our families. And nobody escapes. The way this works is we start out, we bloom, and then we wither, and then eventually we die. And every one of us goes through this life cycle to varying degrees. Some of us get our money's worth, and some of us don't. And this is true for all families. Children, grandchildren, and so forth. It also includes family, friends, people we don't know, everybody. So Suzuki Roshi, who knows, most of you know, but if you're new here, Suzuki Roshi was one of the primary Zen teachers from Japan that came to the States back in the 70s. And he started the San Francisco Zen Center, which still exists. Suzuki Roshi, even in spite of the fact that he's a Zen teacher, had to succumb to the life cycle like the rest of us. So he's now dead. And so one of his students says, "Suzuki Roshi, I've been listening to your lectures for years." And this took place during the question and answer period after Roshi's talk. And he said, "But I don't understand. Could you please put it in a nutshell? Can you reduce Buddhism to one phrase?" And everybody laughed, including Suzuki. And he was quiet for a moment. And Suzuki said, "Everything changes." And then he asked for another question. Everything changes. So I'm wondering, does anybody have any thoughts or feeling about the fact that everyone dies and everything changes all the time? Have any particular reaction to this on this Sunday morning with an extra hour of time that the teacher sits up here and decides to talk about death, about impermanence? Yet impermanence, the acceptance of it and the realization of it, changes our relationship with our lives. Each moment becomes much more precious. And also we realize that we don't know how many moments we have, so we live, as we practice this, fully in every moment that we're giving, because we never know if that's our last moment. So in one sense, you could look at this and get a chill. Oh my God. But on the other side of this is that it's a beautiful lesson. Impermanence is a beautiful lesson. The fact that death is just around the corner can be either be received like the door that I couldn't get open, a problem, or we can receive it as a gift that teaches us how to live our lives.
It sort of amazes me that the illusion that we don't actually feel our own death, I think, in a lot of ways, which is pretty incredible. Like, you have to talk about it. And the fact that I don't go around generally thinking about it, it's sort of like an amazing trick of the mind, I think, in a way, that mm-hmm. you're able to function. I mean, you know you're not going to be here. So there'd be different kind of reactions to that. Hey, you're not going to be here. But yet, at the same point, you don't really think that in any kind of mm-hmm. fundamental way. You don't go through your life, or I don't go through my life saying, oh, I'm going to die, and I'm going to die. Some people, I guess, do, but it's kind of that important disconnect, I think. Otherwise, you know, you'd melt on the floor.
Well, maybe. When you're young, death or impermanence is more of a philosophical concept that isn't really related to us. You know, we view life as something that's going to go on into the future. But you become a certain age, and that flips around, and you realize that you have less time left than you've lived. You know, that time is running out, and all of a sudden, impermanence takes on a totally different meaning. So it depends on your age, in a sense. And so the idea of impermanence is really, as Suzuki pointed out, it's at the core of Buddhism, it's at the core of Zen practice. Because everything changes, because nothing stays fixed, the big mistake is to hold on to anything. Because the holding on is what creates suffering. And so and I've mentioned this before, it's the holding on that creates suffering, which doesn't mean that impermanence doesn't cause pain, right? We lose somebody. Of course that causes pain. But if we hold on, then that pain goes from pain to suffering. The final words that were said by Buddha were, impermanence is inescapable. Everything vanishes. And this was in the book that Alan and I wrote, but I love this story, and it's a very short story, but it's called No Water, No Moon. And it's about a Japanese Buddhist nun, Chiyono, who, after many years of practice, became enlightened because of a beautiful moon that was reflected in a pail of water that she was carrying. So, you know, what I imagine is that her job, or one of the jobs that as a nun in the monastery, was that she would bring water into the monastery for the Sangha to drink. And so I picture her doing this every day, and that maybe a lot of the time at night the sky was clear, and as she was carrying this bucket, she could see the moon floating on the water in the bucket. So the poem that she wrote is, in this way and that, I tried to save the old pail, since the bamboo strip was weakening and about to break. They used the bamboo to keep the bucket together. Since the bamboo strip was weakening and about to break, then at last the bottom fell out. No more water in the pail, no more moon in the water. And then she has a great insight. And in that moment, when the pail broke, right, when impermanence appeared and wholly appeared, that was her lesson. That was what triggered her awakening. She realized the essence of our lives right there in that moment. She didn't cling to the bucket. She didn't, you know, cling to the fact that this moon that used to bring her joy each night was gone. She realized the truth of impermanence. Now, Adele Kenny, who is a haiku poet, nationally recognized, but she's from New Jersey, who actually, by the way, is Roshi Chachetti's poetry mentor. And this is a simple haiku that she wrote. Empty mountain house, falling into itself. Empty mountain house, falling into itself. Now, these haiku, like poems, you know, they all hit us differently, but to me, this image of an empty mountain house collapsing into itself is really quite beautiful. And then another haiku, two old men help each other up the steps. Now we can view this as, now look at those two old guys. My God, nobody, they can't get up to the steps by themselves. They have to help each other. You know, and that's sort of a particular view about aging. And a lot of times those kind of statements, when we make them, is we're pushing away the truth of what we're seeing. Another way to see that is how beautiful that is. Two people sharing old age, two old men, yet helping each other, which is a beautiful representation of aging. The truth of impermanence is that it is really only present in this moment right now. Thinking that it's going to occur later is a fiction, right? It's now. Every moment, impermanence is taking place. Throughout the universe, things are changing. Things are vanishing. And because we know that underlying all these individual beings and things, everything is connected. So when one thing vanishes, it affects the whole universe. So things don't come and go in isolation from each other. It's a basic part of being alive. Impermanence is our life. So right now, in some way, things are vanishing before our eyes. Now there's a saying in Zen that to live our lives, we must die fully in each moment. We must die fully in each moment. And the way we die fully in each moment is we let go of the self. Who we think we are dies. And of course, there are no guarantees beyond this moment. The Zen master Sun San is said that he would yell, "Soon dead," during retreats. And this was his effort to teach his students not to squander their lives. Now, our old friend Dogen wrote that practice isn't so much a matter of changing, of improving the conditions of your life or your inner life, confusing the conditions of your inner or outer life, as a way of fully embracing and appreciating those conditions, especially the condition of impermanence and loss. So, we are impermanence. It's not something from the outside that happens to us. We are impermanence. We are part of a universe that is impermanent. So we are impermanent. And when our mind is still, we live this out without a problem. The mind is the troublemaker. The mind is that's troubled by impermanence. The mind that's troubled by death. But if we can receive this truth and live in harmony with it, our lives will be less disturbed. Now, when I was writing this talk, I was thinking, what would be, how could I express, you know, these Buddhist concepts and writings from Dogen and so forth? And my partner, Faye, has been for years and years and years, most of her life, a skier. And so I've heard stories about skiing. So it reminded me, or it brought to mind, that a trip down the side of a mountain is a wonderful metaphor for impermanence. Now, those of you know who know anything about skiing, or any activity really, is that to ski down the mountain, if you're an expert skier, you become one with the mountain. Right? There's no separation. You become one with the mountain, and you become one with everything that appears. And the mountain is, as we experience it in skiing, impermanent. You get to the top of the mountain, you step off the lift, turn around, and you begin to ski down the mountain. And so it starts that there's this beautiful light snow, which is perfect for skiing. And then all of a sudden, we hit a spot where there's ice. So the beautiful white soft snow was impermanent. It's changed, right? Now the experience is moving through an icy patch, which can be dangerous. So the joy of skiing in the perfect snow changes to a real concentration and maybe even a tensing to a certain degree, because it can be dangerous and it can lead to a fall. And then pass through that, and then the snow becomes beautiful again. Then all of a sudden there's a mogul, a bump, which has to be negotiated. So again, it went from this smooth, soft snow, which was just perfect on this sunny day, to uh-oh. Now, a skilled skier wouldn't say, uh-oh, but I'm doing that for dramatic effect. Then a mogul appears, So again, the beautiful snow has changed, and now there's a mogul to be navigated. And so then that happens. Then there's another mogul, and so that happens. Then the skier realizes, as that person, he or she, continues down the mountain, their speed is really quite high. So they went from a particular pace that was comfortable, which then changed to a pace of being very fast, which required another change, which was to reduce that speed and to go more slowly. And in the end of this trip down the mountain, a big change had taken place. The person skiing had probably skied down several thousand feet. And so they started at the top of this mountain and ended up on the bottom of this mountain. So again, something had changed. Now, if you think about this, the skiing in harmony with the circumstances, impermanence was a basic part of skiing. Everything was constantly changing, but there was no resistance on the part of the skier. The skier accepted those circumstances and moved in harmony with all the different changes. So part of this also is what I've talked about many times, is paying attention to each moment that's being alive, paying attention to each moment. Some moments are joyful, some moments are sad, some moments are meh. But we don't fight those moments. We live in harmony with those moments. Now, this is another little story that was in the book. And it's a story, a brief story, that there was an old paint can laying on the back porch of my house. This is a true story. And I thought about, you know, how many times had I passed this can and never really noticed it, right? I didn't notice it because it's an old crappy paint can that's been used. And then one day, I was more awake, more attentive. And that suddenly gave life to this old dented can, an appreciation for actually its impermanent nature. So seeing the faded blue speckles, the beauty of the rusted rim, the dent in the side, brought about the experience of the bittersweet memory of painting my son's room. So here was this old, some people might say, crappy paint can, which get it off the deck, throw it out, which may be true. But there was another way to experience it. And that was to appreciate the beauty of this can in that moment. You know, that it's our mind that makes trouble, that gets in the way. We label and categorize things. This is beautiful, this is ugly, in all of that. But if we appreciate the impermanence of this can, that the part of this can, that the can is changing through time, but that change is really beautiful. So brace yourself, because I'm going to end with a part of a poem by Mary Oliver. Mary Oliver, in her poem, The Summer Day, asks, "Doesn't everything die at last too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" Thank you.